Next on Nightlife, we dive deep into the documentary Becoming Colleen, a moving story about how one lady negotiated her gender transition later in life.
All my life I've been transgender. I was scared of anybody finding out the problem. I remember going to different doctors and they said, take your clothes off, get on the table. I tried that and then they pulled everything and checked everything. And they said, yeah, you're okay, son. You'll grow out of it. Tapped me on the head and said, you're right, away you go. I couldn't even explain to me what was going on, what was happening to me. And when I got a bit older, I got very frustrated and disappointed in going to see doctors and doctors after doctors after doctors. Being 84 years of age, it's been a lot of years and it's been a long time trying to get help or even get somebody to talk to about it.
That's Colleen, an 84-year-old transgender woman transitioning from male to female in the coastal community of Coffs Harbour on the New South Wales mid-north coast. Having lived most of her life as Colin, a husband, father and a policeman, Colleen was determined to achieve her dream, to be a woman. But imagine that for a moment. Imagine feeling like a woman in your mind and in your actions, but having all of the body parts of a man. Well, for the next hour, we're going to dive deep into Colleen's life and see what that experience is really like. I wish that we could do it with Colleen, but sadly, she has now passed away. Instead, the director of the documentary, Becoming Colleen, Finding the Shoe That Fits, Ian Thompson, joins us. Ian, welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you very much. It's a joy to be here.
Tell us about Colleen.
Yeah, Colleen is quite an amazing person. It was incredible meeting her the first time and hearing about her journey and her story. And I think the thing that struck me really from the first moment is what a gentle and humble person Colleen was. I think we'd been very exposed in the media to stories about transgender people. Obviously, the Caitlyn Jenner story was very big. We've been used to seeing representations in the media from some transgender personalities in the media, you know, from inner city Sydney and inner city Melbourne. But Colleen was a wonderfully humble person living in Coffs Harbour that had a very sort of simple life, a life that was probably very similar to so many of our lives, and yet was extraordinary in so many other ways.
Is transgender the right term to use? In the documentary, there's this reference to dysphoria. What is that, dysphoria?
Yes, it's this whole area is, I think the terminology in this area is really sort of developing and changing very, very quickly. So it probably depends a little bit about who you talk to. My experience is that it's really important that we sort of move away from a lot of these sort of generic labels and stereotypes. For me, the story is very much about Colleen and Colleen Young. But of course, from a medical sense, being transgender gives us a clear indication of somebody who is sort of caught between what we would probably describe as the binary, the either male or female. What we're discovering and what the medical profession and psychology is discovering more and more, there are many, many shades and many, many points of that along the scale. But one of the terms that's used extensively when talking about people who are in that state of gender transition or transgender, if you like, is the term gender dysphoria, which really describes that sort of disconnect between how somebody presents on the outside and feels on the inside. So it's something that's something that the medical profession and the psychology profession feels that they can help people with the dysphoria, which is sort of the disconnect. But of course, it has sort of strange connotations, and it's increasingly in non-medical circles not being used or not being used as much. I think this whole situation is very much about listening to people, understanding who they are, and really asking them how they want to be referred to and how they see themselves. Mm. But yes, I hope that's a clear indication.
That is, no, it is, because we're all individual and we're all unique and we're made that way. And so everyone's story is really quite unique, right?
Yes, yes.
Well, let's look into Colleen's story and starting at her childhood. Mm. What was that like?
Well, Colleen tells the very moving story that when, as a child, as young as 5 years old, she had a very clear sense that she was a girl. She felt like she was a girl. She was a girl on the inside. And something growing up in rural New Zealand was something, and this would have been, you know, 80 years ago, you can imagine, not a very accommodating environment. She sort of felt that there wasn't anybody around that really understood. She describes her mother as being the only person that truly understood who she was. And her mother unfortunately passed away when she was 5 years old. So she felt very isolated, had no one to talk to. And she does tell the wonderful story about how if she spoke to her father about, you know, feeling like she was a girl on the inside, he would give her a clip over the ears and tell her to grab her gumboots and do some work on the in the yard. And she would take the gumboots and climb up into her favorite tree in the garden and take her carving knife and would carve the most beautiful pair of girls' dancing shoes out of her old rubber gumboots. And she would sit up in the tree and she'd put the shoes on. And that gave her, it was the only thing really at that age that gave her a sense of her inner self.
Mm, Colleen has always loved shoes. She's got quite the shoe fetish. Let's hear now about the first pair of shoes that she bought herself.
Quite a few years after that, I'd managed to get a job working in the theatre as a theatre projectionist. Not far from the theatre. A shoe shop there. I saw ballet shoes in the window and I thought, how can I get round to going in and buying a pair of ballet shoes? I plucked up the courage, I walked to them myself, money in my pocket, and bought a pair of ballet shoes. Took them back to the projection room, put them on, tripped around, dancing around the projection room with shoes on. But I had to be very careful watching out to see if anybody's coming up the stairs. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was Christmas.
That's Colleen there. How significant were shoes in her life?
Oh, very, very important. For somebody who is living a secret life, who had such an important existential part of herself that she was suppressing, the only real expression she could find for that was through shoes, because she was living and presenting as a man. She was married, she was a father. And shoes, initially the shoes were sort of a little bit androgynous. She'd buy sort of very fancy boots and things like that to start off with. And her son John tells this wonderful story how he was, when Colleen was living as Colin and building a pool for the family out the back of the house, would come down wearing Heather, or Colin's wife's, shoes, and was stamping around on the floor. And John would say, "Dad, why have you got Mum's shoes on?" And she said, "Oh, the heels are very good for compacting the earth." So it was sort of delightful to sort of hear how Colin would look for any opportunity to put on Heather's shoes.
Let's talk about Heather. What a special lady. When Colleen was Cole, he met and ended up marrying Heather, and they crafted quite a unique relationship. But how did the marriage begin?
Well, they were both very young. This was back in New Zealand in those early days. And the thing that brought them together was their love of Scottish music and Scottish dancing. So Cole played the bagpipes and Heather used to love to dance. She used to love Scottish dance. And so the Scottish dancing community brought them together. And then as young people, they, you know, got to know each other. They fell in love with each other. And really sort of started a quite amazing journey together, one that went on for many years and really was this incredible bond, this incredible love that went on to sort of transcend their gender roles. And I think that story really reminds me of how important it is, the love between two people, two human beings, that their conventional societal gender roles don't really play as much of a role as the love that exists between these two human beings. And indeed, this was very tested later in their relationship when Cole started to come out to Heather increasingly and share her secret with her.
So it started off with Cole, you know, trying on her shoes, and then Cole slowly coming out and admitting that he would have loved to have been born a girl. And then in the end, they had a lot of fun together, really, didn't they? What sort of fun would they get up to?
Well, I think, you know, it's one of those things when you share a secret, you have a special bond. It's like sort of being in a club, a special secret club. So even though Colleen came out as being transgender at 82, as far as our interview sort of uncovered that even in her 40s, Cole had started to come out to Heather. I think Heather caught Cole actually wearing her shoes. I think that's how it started. But they started talking about it, and Heather would say to Cole, "Well, you know, do you like, you know, dressing up in my clothes? And, you know, what is it about it?" And they sat down together and they had a conversation, and Heather would then sit on the sofa and get Cole dressed up, and Cole would do a little bit of a fashion parade, and Heather would sort of give her approval or non-approval. And it sort of became quite a habit. They would send the boys off to a movie with some friends. They would pull down the blinds of their suburban bungalow. They would get dressed up as two women, and then under the cover of darkness, they would go promenading around the streets arm in arm. So it was a sort of a, I think that's one of the things that really melded them together as a couple, this secret that they shared, which Cole didn't really make public for another 40 years.
Luckily, her shoe size was very similar to my size. Once or twice, she caught me doing it. And a look of amazement on her face, and which I couldn't blame her for. And she asked, "What am I doing?" And I said, "Oh, I just enjoy dressing up occasionally." "Yeah, well, do you really like it?" And I said, "Yeah, I do, actually." And it led one thing to another, and we started talking about it. And then after a while, she said, "Well, if you feel like putting the shoes on, put them on." One thing led to another, and then I came out and I explained that I would like to have been a girl, and I realised that under the circumstances I was married now, and I had to be very careful what I said and what I did. And she said, "Oh, well, what say we get dressed up one night and we go for a walk?" And I said, "Yeah, that'd be lovely." And this became a habit. We could go out for a walk, get dressed up and go for a wander. And then one night we were wandering down the road and some young guys went past and started whistling at us. And Heather and I didn't know which way to run.
That's Colleen, an 85-year-old transgender woman who transitioned from male to female later in life. It's a moving story from a documentary which is about to hit the screens called Becoming Colleen, Finding the Shoe That Fits. The director, Ian Thompson, is joining us tonight as we find out more about Colleen's life. Ian, sadly, Heather passed away, and the grief of that almost released Colleen completely, didn't it? You've spoken with a lot of experts in the field. What did they tell you about these key milestone events and how they can affect transgender people?
Yes, of course, it was incredibly traumatic for Colleen to lose Heather, the woman that she loved, the woman that kept her secret for so long, the woman that shared so many experiences with her. So initially it was very alienating. Colleen felt very alone. She became very depressed. But it was at that point that she sought some therapy and some help. And some of the medical experts we speak to in the film, Dr. Vlahakis, for example, he says that it's not uncommon that when people experience such milestones in their lives, such as the loss of a partner or a loved one, that they, as painful as it is, they also sort of feel a little bit freer to pursue a different path. And I think that's really what led Colleen to find some help through the social worker, Rowena Bianchino in Coffs Harbour. And they started on this journey of really sort of identifying what was happening to Colleen and becoming more open about it and trying to work with the gender dysphoria, which we talked about this before, about sort of aligning how Colleen felt on the inside and how she presented on the outside, which really became the genesis of the film. That was invited up. I know Rowena, I'm a filmmaker, and she said, would you mind just filming Colleen, you know, presenting as a woman to help her see herself? And I went up for a very short sort of period to shoot a short video, and it ended up being a 2-hour conversation. And we said to Colleen, you know, this is such an amazing story. Would you be interested in sharing it with others? And Colleen, as humble and gentle as she is, she sort of felt that by sharing her story, it might make it easier for others, not only others that may follow in her footsteps, but also family members and people who know transgender people. It might help them understand as well. So we then, 2.5 years ago, embarked on this wonderful journey of creating this film together.
Mm. So Colleen started to live as a woman, and her dream, really, her dream, and this is what you tap into in the documentary, was to die as a woman with all of the womanly bits.
Heather suggested that I have the sex change, and she'd heard already about it in the paper, and I think I'd had odd cuttings from books and papers and things that I'd left conveniently around, which what you tend to do. But to be honest, I thought about it seriously, and I thought, well, this would be the ideal thing I'd love to. I've heard some very good reports about the surgery over there, and the specialists are very, very caring people, and you get very good treatment over there. If I can get my health back to the standard, I'd feel comfortable. But I've still got a long way to go. It's just something I've dreamed of my whole life.
Mm, but it's a big hurdle, isn't it? You know, finding the right doctor is a key part to it, Ian. How important is that?
Of a very important. I mean, it's a big step. I mean, I think surgery, you know, sort of, it's very physically intrusive. I can certainly follow Colleen's thoughts, and it really was her biggest dream. She says, if I could die in the body of a woman, I'd be happy. But it is a very big step, particularly at 82, which is when Colleen first came out and was speaking to Dr. Vlahakis and looking at what the options were. So, you know, health at that stage starts to be a question, and there is certainly a lot of risk involved. So it would have been a very, very, very large step. So I think what, you know, Rowena and Dr. Vlahakis were working on was really trying to sort of bring together those two sort of senses of how, you know, Colleen presents in the outside world and how she feels on the inside, perhaps without having to to go through the surgery, but it was one of her biggest dreams.
Mm.
And it's really interesting, in the documentary we found these wonderful old family films provided by her son John, of how when she was living as Colin, she was filming at the beauty pageant in Grafton, and was very fixated on the beautiful women on the floats, and you could see even right back then this fascination with being a woman.
If it hadn't have been for her health, even though she was in her 80s, do you think she could have gone through with it at that age?
Look, I think it was an option, and certainly one that was considered. I think it does depend very much on someone's personal health. At 80, at 82, at 84, if someone was really robust and really in great physical shape, that would have certainly given them the best chance. But yes, I think any family members would have been quite concerned. So there are two sides to it, really. Is that burning desire that someone has, and then on the other side, all the people around that person that love them so much that are concerned about their well-being. So it is a dilemma, and it was a dilemma for Colleen.
Unfortunately, her health started to slip and she had to be put into a nursing home. And this was a particularly scary time for Colleen because, you know, she had just come out to her family and friends. She was living life as a woman. But now she had to move into a Christian-based, you know, religious-based nursing home. And what we know is that, you know, sometimes people don't look kindly on people of that sort of difference. How worried was she? How much anxiety did that cause?
Oh, she was extremely worried, very, very anxious. You know, I think she'd reached a point in her life that she was starting to feel truly free. And then suddenly her age and her condition meant that she was going to have to move into a retirement facility. And on paper, of course, she was still a man. She was still Colin Young. And she was very, very concerned that she was going to be forced back into the closet, which you can imagine after this incredible emotional journey of getting to sort of 80, 82 and then 84 and really being true to yourself, and then suddenly having some institution that was going to say to you, I'm sorry, you know, you cannot be who you are. You have to be who you are on paper. And particularly in that, I mean, so many aged care facilities that are Christian run, they do a wonderful job, but historically there hasn't been a great sort of history around dealing with people from sort of diverse gender and sexual orientation backgrounds. There hasn't been a lot of understanding and a lot of acceptance and celebration, so that was also a big concern. And add to that, in regional Australia, we're not talking about moving into an aged care facility in Darlinghurst or St Kilda. We're talking about moving into an aged care facility in regional Australia, which tends to be sort of conservative, very small communities. So she was very concerned.
Here on Nightlife, Ian Thompson joins us. He's the director of Becoming Colleen, the story of a lady who went through a gender transition later in life. She was 82 when she came out to her family and friends. Sadly, Colleen never got to achieve her dream of dying as a woman with all of the womanly bits, and she always called it the problem. Do you think in the end that she still saw it that way?
I'm not sure. I would like to think that with all of the love and the support that Colleen had around her, that she might have truly had a sense of being a woman. Although when she passed away, she hadn't been able to go through the full surgery. The support around her was the people around her were very supportive in helping her really sort of see herself as a woman, as a transgender woman. So it's sort of hard to say, but I can definitely say that she certainly had a lot of love and support, and perhaps a little bit unexpected as well, because the nursing manager at the aged care facility sort of saw this as an opportunity to not only educate her staff, but sort of open the eyes to the facility that these people are around. I say these people, it sounds terrible. Wonderful people such as Colleen are part of our community and need to be loved and celebrated. And in addition to that, you know, can really add diversity to a nursing home, to our society on a broader level. You know, I think there's great opportunity and value in celebrating diversity rather than treating it as the other or, you know, the marginalized. I did feel that at the end of her life, she did experience some of that love and support, perhaps from unexpected quarters as well.
All I've been through, all the fights and scraps I've had, and how fighting seems to not always help. You gotta try and be negative, you gotta try and fight somebody or some organisation, but it didn't really help. And I found that I was better just to try and coast people into your side of the thinking and have a bit of a laugh, try and add a bit of comedy in your life and what you've been through and what you might be going to go through and hope that some of those things come along that you would like. You probably won't get them, but one can but wish. That's the main thing in my life is wishing.
A very special lady indeed. Ian Thompson, as a society, how much further do you think we have to go to accept, to explore and to celebrate difference?
Way to go. I mean, we're incredibly privileged in Australia. We live in a very, quite an open society, although a lot of the roots of our culture in this country are still quite conservative, particularly in regional areas. And I think culturally, where we've come from, you know, the first colonists that came out, the whole Aussie battler thing, the rise of the male in Australian society, the way we worship our sporting heroes, often pushes everything into that binary, you know, that sort of very macho male side of things, a very sort of female feminine side of things. And really what I've sort of learned through this story is probably the biggest lie that I feel like I've been told or misconception is that the binary is all that exists. You know, the heteronormative male and female understanding of gender and sexuality, that has never solely existed. You know, transgenderism has always been there, as sort of homosexuality and lesbianism and intersex. This is part of the human condition, and we see it in other cultures. You know, the Samoan culture with the Fafani, and I think this is one of the problems that we have as a society, is that we sort of like to sort of push things into that binary, and if something doesn't fit, then we have a problem with it. Then suddenly we feel we have to attack it. We have to bash it, we have to murder it, we have to kill it, we have to stamp it out, rather than actually sort of saying, well, wait a minute, this is wonderful. This is sort of diversity. This adds to the cultural weave of our society. This makes my life a much more interesting place. I'm talking to people that have a different experience of life and gender and sexuality, and wow, that sounds great. And you know what? When I go into a nursing home, I want to be hanging out with people that have had a broad experience of life. And I don't want to exclude anyone from that. And I think that's where we really need to move to as a society. There is a big, often around marginalized Australians, particularly in the LGBTQI community, there's been a lot of talk over the last decades around acceptance and tolerance. But, you know, that always sort of puts that classic hierarchy in place, that there's a dominant group that will accept or tolerate a marginal group. We've really got to shift that conversation to around valuing and celebrating. You know, let's celebrate that difference rather than marginalizing it and then sort of accepting or tolerating it.
Ian, finally, I think the takeaway for me was that maybe gender is a spectrum. Maybe it's not male and female. Maybe it's a spectrum.
Absolutely. And I just think, how important is it really? I mean, if somebody, you know, if somebody is happy, if someone is joyous in their life, in their own body, if they're living a happy or fulfilling and a giving life, does it really matter if it's a man doing that or a female or a trans woman or a trans man or a gay man? I think the obsession with gender and sexual orientation sort of defies the potential that we all have to celebrate and enjoy each other as human beings and as individuals. And I hope one of the take-homes from the film is that this isn't really a film about transgenderism and aged care. It's a film about Colleen Young. You know, it's a film about a person who's had a very human, a very moving, a very difficult journey, but one that touches or has the potential of touching all of our lives in some way.
Ian Thompson, thanks for joining us on Nightlife.
It's been a pleasure.